everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode and season of the Horror Friendly Podcast. My name is Katie, and I am joined by Chantel, and Chantel only.
Hello.
I know.
Hello. I feel like the disappointment now, where it's like, oh, it's Chantel, and people are waiting to hear Charlie's voice.
I know. It's sad. I mean, we're still getting used to it, so.
Yeah, we haven't fallen out. We haven't anything like that. Charlie's fine. It's just that, again, this isn't, you know, it doesn't pay us. This is a part-time fun hobby. So, unfortunately, when our real life jobs and lives and everything else take over, this has to take a backseat. It does mean, however, though, if Katie or I have a very busy week and have to take a backseat, one person will just be talking to themselves. And I don't know how that will go as an episode.
Yeah, I think it's like a podcast. I'm not too sure how that's going to, how that's going to go down.
Like, I know some podcasters do it and they do great, but that's their thing. Like, our thing is talking to each other.
Yeah, that's not going to work so well. But yeah, hopefully Charlie will be back for like anniversary episodes and things like that. But as Tel says, like, life's getting in the way, but she's very much still part of the podcast. She's just ducking out a little bit this season.
She still has access to the Instagram and the Facebook, so, and the Twitter, which I think
she does.
Sorry, the X, which I think she uses more than me. So yeah, if you message her on there, she will see it. So, you know.
Yes, she will see it.
But shall we get started with our... Oh my God, I've got hair in my mouth and everything. It's a great start. Shall we get started with this first episode of the season? Are you ready?
This mammoth episode.
Oh, I can't believe it's taken us... This is season six. I can't believe it's taken us six seasons to get to this.
I know.
What have we been doing?
I don't know. What the fuck have we been doing with our lives?
How did Sharknado come before this?
That's a question I'll be asking myself for the rest of my life.
We can only apologise.
You see a lot, Doc. When are you strong enough to point that high-powered perception at yourself? What about it? Why don't you look at yourself and write down what you see? Maybe you're afraid to.
A census taker once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
We're making up for it now. We are here. We have got The Silence of the Lambs, the 1991 horror crime horror special film, whatever you call it. So Clarice Starling, an FBI trainee, seeks help from Hannibal Lecter, a psychopathic serial killer and former psychiatrist, in order to apprehend another murderer who has been claiming female victims. Katie, do you remember your first impression?
Yes, I do, actually, in fact, because my family decided to sit and watch this on Christmas Eve.
Yes.
About 15 years ago, maybe more. I don't even fucking know.
Great Christmas Eve film.
Well, I remember being on the computer, probably on like Bebo or MSN or something, not really listening, but then kind of getting kind of bits of it. So I do remember quite clearly Buffalo Bill, and I just remember him scaring the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Especially like it puts the lotion on its skin, like that bit I remember really well, like in my head. So I actually do remember the first fucking time I watched this. I kind of was looking over. And then I think a few years later, I watched it properly. But yeah, I mean, I find it quite hard for people that don't like this film. It's like, what can you not like about it? I think just not even, like, because it's not even a horror film. It's like more like a thriller, but it is just considered one of the best films of all time. And I would agree with that.
Yeah, no, it's a great film. And it's funny that you say it's not really a horror, because actually we finished watching it and my partner was like, how is that a horror film? I said, but it's psychological. Like, you couldn't put it into any other category, but it still fucks with your head. But it's interesting that obviously you're like, oh, the one that really freaked me out is Buffalo Bill. when you've got Hannibal Lecter in the film and he's not even the scariest guy.
I know.
But he's also a terrifying guy, but you're also kind of rooting for him. It's really fucking weird. Like,
he's almost like a bit likable.
Yeah.
In a really weird way.
But the thing is, he does nothing to make you like him. Everything he does is worse than the last bit. And yet you're still kind of rooting for him. All because he doesn't kill Clarence. Clarice is the only reason we like him. And I'm like, that makes no sense. He's a fucking psychopath.
It is very dark. And like, yeah, there's a lot. But I think it's like the I ate his liver with some faffa beans and a nice Chianti. And like those just incredible lines. And like, love your suit when he's all like, masked up, and it's those lines like that that make him weirdly likable, and you want to see more of him on screen, even though he was only on screen for fucking 16 minutes.
Wow, I literally, like, because I was reading that, like, and I was like, but he feels like he's on screen for so much longer.
Yeah, like, yeah, and he won an Oscar for this. Like,
I know,
it's insane.
But they got, sorry, the film got 5 Oscars. Including Best Actress, who I can only assume was Jodie Foster. I didn't actually look up to confirm because I just assumed. But like, how? 16 minutes. Although, okay, so I did find this out. Starting off with the facts, starting in hard. So not only did it win him an Oscar, it did lose him a girlfriend. Because the woman he was dating at the time when it came out and they watched it, she literally broke up with him because she said every time she looked at him, all she could see was a cold-blooded killer. And she couldn't be with him anymore. So, wow. Oscar or girlfriend, like, it, you know, there's wins and loses, it turns out, in this Hollywood game. Like,
yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I think clearly it wasn't a long-term thing. So maybe the Oscar was worth it.
I don't know how I'd feel, though. Can you imagine being with someone for, like, I don't know how long they were together, but, like, can you imagine, like, you were with someone for, like, 30 years and then you saw them do this and you're like, I didn't know you had that side of you. I don't like this.
Yeah, it's so fucking weird. Imagine. Yeah,
just like, no, out. Throwing pens.
We'll have to find out how long they were together for before she made this decision to...
Yeah. I mean, if it was a couple of months and it's like, do you know what? You did that too easily.
I'm freaked out now.
Yes, time to run away. Yeah, I didn't look into that part. It did say girlfriend, so...
Okay.
But again, you can never assume. So
no,
I will have to back up that fact. But I just thought that was really interesting when it's like everyone raves, oh, he got an Oscar. I'm like, yeah, but it did also hit him in other areas. So
You win some, you lose some, eh?
Yeah, right. But I don't even know where to start with this one. It's just so good.
I don't know where to start. Like, I mean, we could start. I mean, we can start with the good one. We can start with Clarice, because obviously, like, she's our main protagonist in this. And I find it really interesting how they kind of, well, I guess the book, how they looked at it from like a female perspective, because they, when she's obviously training to be an FBI agent and she is in charge and she gets taken and she's in charge of this case, the men that she's in charge of are just not taking her seriously whatsoever. Like, there's so many shots of like them either just looking her up and down or flirting with her, like
the creepy doctor,
Dr. Chilton, who just kind of like looks her up and down. No one seems to really take her seriously, like, as an FBI agent or a practicing FBI agent, and I found that really interesting. When she walks into the Baltimore State Hospital, and obviously then when she meets Hannibal Lecter, walks back, she's, that horrible thing happens to her.
Yeah.
And it, like we were saying a minute ago, like, at least Hannibal Lecter is kind of on her side in that way. And you kind of think, is he like the only man in this that's kind of like fully on her side?
So I'd say yes and no. I will give, and I've, again, terrible with names. What are we like? What's her manager?
Her bosses. Her,
yeah, him. He's kind of on her side. And
Jack Crawford.
Thank you. Jack Crawford, which I swear is like a name that gets used in a lot of like police films. But Jack Crawford, he...
True.
because he starts out using her. And he's obviously, you know, he sends her in because he thinks she'll work with Hannibal. He doesn't give her all the information. But then when he's like, oh, don't talk about this in front of a woman, she calls him out on it because he tries to like play it off. I think he even calls her like bait, not baby, he calls her like precious or something. And she calls him out on it, like, no, the other men are looking to you to set an example. And then he sort of, he changes and he does start, you know, yeah, he's not pulling her into all the action scenes. She ends up there anyway. But he's very, he is trying to better himself. Now, I wouldn't say he's 100% like feminist hero, but I don't think it's a feminist film. I think there's too many other things going on, but she's a brilliant feminist character. Because I actually did a lot of like reading on this because I was like, I don't know where I sit. But there was a really interesting, I read a BBC article by Nicholas Barber, and it's literally the article's really good. I'll probably share it on the Instagram. But even just in the, like, it's not the subheading, I guess, where it's like, both a heart-stopping chiller and a commentary on sexual harassment and the male gaze was miles ahead of its time, which is like, and as you say, like, there's the shot of her in the lift and she's half, like, her shoulder didn't even come up to the guy's chest.
Yeah.
Like, she was so tiny next to them, and they were deliberately making her look small and making her look lonely and making her just look so out of place in this male world that I thought was brilliant. I thought it was really well done. And as you say, like, when she was running and everyone's watching her. But that's what half the film's about. Buffalo Bill has been watching women his entire life, and there's the really negative. There's, like... woman in this film isn't getting away with from that male gaze, and it's having negative effects, whether it's professionally and guys misjudging you, or whether it's they're going to take your skin off, because apparently that's where it can go.
That's the thing, yeah.
Like, that's the extreme version, but it fucking happens.
Yeah. Like... Exactly. Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, okay. Every woman in this is a kind of victim in some way.
I would say, because I think... the only sort of female character, and I say not the only, but one of the, I'll give her, say, main female character. I don't think she has as many lines, but Ardelia, she's the roommate. So again, she's a great character because she's actually, when they're discussing Buffalo Bill and like comments the Lecter's made, she's really intuitive. So I'm like, oh, she'd have been really good to go and see him as well.
Yeah.
But she doesn't get given nearly as much screen time or anything. But then even at the end, like, the creepy bug doctors are like, oh, take a photo with her. They don't even know her. Like, what the fuck? You've seen her for 3 seconds. No.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, no, I thought she was quite an interesting character. It was kind of like, I don't know whether she was in the book or not, but like, it was a good addition to have, to like have someone else, to have another female character involved in the film.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah, no, I thought she, and yeah, like you say, it's certainly not a feminist film, but it's definitely, she's definitely up there as one of like, as a big sort of feminist icon and someone you could like want to be, because she's kind of going for what she wants despite everything else. Yeah, and she does get her way in the end, but fuck me, that last scene.
Like, that's the thing. Would you ever feel safe? Would you ever feel safe?
Oh, I know.
Would you always feel safe? Because you'd be like, it's okay if anyone comes near me, Lecter will be around the corner ready to kill them.
Well, that's the thing. Like, do they have that kind of relationship? I mean, she says in the film, like, he won't go after me.
He'd consider it, like, what was it? He'd consider it rude or something?
Rude.
Yeah, like.
Yeah, like, that's really interesting that she took that, like, because they were kind of acquaintances at this point.
Mm.
It's almost like, and he has a soft spot for her, so he wouldn't go after her, and like, she's right, he probably wouldn't.
Did Lecter ever kill a female that we know of?
I feel like maybe in the Hannibal TV series he might have done.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think maybe he has in other adaptions.
I don't know. No, I don't know at the top of my head. That would have been interesting to find out. But
I'm trying to remember because I love that. I love that series, and now I can't. There were so many deaths, I can't remember them all. I'm sure he does. But again, in that adaption. But I'm wondering again, was it a thing where it's like, you do get it sometimes where, like, obviously killers have an MO, especially like serial killers, where they have a type. Buffalo Bill has a very particular type of girl he's looking for. So again, I was like, oh, I wonder if Hannibal Lecter, like, you know, wouldn't kill a female. Oh, oh, lucky us. But
yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know if he, again, whether it's just to make a point or if he respects her. And that's why he wouldn't kill her. And it's like, oh, so.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
I think it's not, in my opinion, it's not relevant to whether, yeah, she's male or female. It's more the respect along the way that they've kind of given each other, because she essentially opened up to him. She spoke about how she remembers the lambs being slaughtered where she lived, and she couldn't save them. And he kind of forced her to open up to that, but like, she still did. And so he knows a personal part of her life, and saying like, oh, this is why you want to save this girl, because you couldn't save the lambs. And it's like, he's really going deep into her brain.
But it's like, I think, yeah, he sees her as like a colleague at that point, because she trusted him to help her solve the case. So he's like, you see me as an equal, or at least brain, like, you know, I'm still behind bars, but
yeah.
Yeah, it's good. It is. Ah, oh, it's such a good film.
Well, I think I read as well that they only met, I think, at like very briefly before they started filming. Jodie Foster and Anthony Hopkins. Yeah. And so like their first kind of official meet was that first scene that they have together. So she just walks along that corner and just sees him, and that incredible shot of him just standing there, like ready for her, with all of his paintings behind. Absolutely, just a beautiful bit of cinema. And then she walks in, and that must have been like the first time that they probably communicated for a while.
Which I think is, to be fair, with that relationship, I think very cleverly done.
Yes.
But yeah, as you say, that shot, fucking iconic. Where it's just like, as well, I think it's so weird because as the viewer, all we know so far is she's walked into the room, loads of newspapers, you're going to go see this guy, Hannibal the Cannibal. And then suddenly,
excellent.
But she's walking down that hallway and it's like, don't put your hand near him. If he asks, like, what, obviously, what are all these like 20, 30 rules? You go past all the other people screaming at her, and then he's there so calm and poised, and it's creepier than any of the others on that road.
The others.
Like, what is it about calm killers that are just fucking creepy?
And like, I hate to go back to the guy that did what he did to Clarice, but it's very interesting as well that Hannibal took that so personally.
Yeah.
Like, he almost hated that it was like a sexual attack on Clarice. I don't know if you've ever seen Con Air, but there's a character in there who's like this worst serial killer ever, but he despises rapists, absolutely hates them. So I wonder if they kind of took that from Hannibal a little bit. But it was funny how like, once that happened to her, he called her back and was like, Clarice, I have more information for you.
Yeah.
And kind of like almost thought, right, that's just fucking happened to you. I'm going to make it better. I'm going to feed you this information. And oh,
I can't let you leave with a bad day. I'll make it better. Well, but again, even that was him like testing her. Because I think at this point, he's offended that a student has come to test him.
Yeah.
And like, until he realizes she's quite smart. So he's like, well, fine, I'll give you a puzzle. And if you're smart enough, and it is, it's just a fucking game to him.
Oh, it's just the brilliant line when he says, oh, yeah. Or I think they were talking about Buffalo Bill, about keeping trophies and things, because obviously Buffalo Bill's entire fucking house is made with trophies. And then he said, not me. And then Clarice says, no, you ate yours.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Which... fucking no crumbs left.
Hey! That is a fucking good line. But just, yeah, no crumbs left from the human.
Absolutely not. He was eating all of it.
Like, yeah. I mean, it's the best way to get rid of the evidence, let's be honest. Probably not, because they can probably tell if you've been eating human. The side effects. That's not the point. The point is, don't eat humans. It's bad.
Exactly.
But it's such a fucking epic line. And then obviously she has a whole fucking puzzle to solve, and she ends up like that fucking thing in the head in the jar. And
yeah,
like it just keeps getting worse. But it's weird as well when it's suddenly that is him being like, who's like, I know who Buffalo Bill. It's like he's known the whole fucking time. Fucking insane. Yeah. I'm like, and he wouldn't say anything until he got. He didn't even get anything out of it. I mean, he did get to escape. But that was just because he's a smart ass, not because that was guaranteed.
No, exactly. Like, it's almost like he enjoyed his back and forth with her and wanted to keep it going until the final time where he thought, okay, right, I'm gonna then tell you his identity. But yeah, amazing, like, on screen chemistry, just and Anthony Hopkins, like, as I say, 16 minutes. He was well deserving of that Oscar. Yeah. Just an unbelievable performance.
Yeah, no, it's so good. It really is.
I mean, where do you even want to even start with Buffalo Bill?
Well, like, I was going to say, last thing on Lecter is not the last thing.
Yeah.
I could not find, and only because I was running out of time, but I could not find if he's wearing contact lenses or not, because I couldn't see them. But every time they do like a close up and he's unblinking, but his eyes look not dead, but like really vacant. And I was like, are they, how is he doing that? And it's ridiculous that when they even have him like in that half mask, and I know he's got like a little bit for his mouth, but the fact that he is doing more acting in his eyes, even though his eyes look fucking dead than most actors can do these days, is insane. That Oscar was well deserved.
Yeah, absolutely insane. Yeah, I agree. He's got like quite nasty eyes, evil eyes. So whether Anthony Hopkins actually just made his eyes like that or the contacts or what, but like, I feel like it's just him. I feel like it was just an incredible performance. But there were, talking of Lecter, in terms of the casting as well, it was quite interesting who they were considering for it. They had, I mean, all of these would have been, I guess, great options, but I can't think of anyone now apart from Anthony Hopkins.
Right.
But Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, Dustin Hoffman,
yeah,
Derek Jacobi, Daniel Day-Lewis, there were Forrest Whitaker. There were like quite a few different options, but
real range there, yeah.
A real range, yeah. Very kind of like random options, but I mean, it's just one of those parts that you can't imagine anyone else playing.
So I did hear apparently Sean Connery was also up for it, but I can't imagine that voice.
Wow,
like. Hello, Chloe.
I'm with an Ashby, aren't you? I sound more like Buffalo Bill, actually.
But yeah.
I'd fuck me.
I'd fuck me. Yeah, 007.
I'd fuck me so fuck hard.
How creepy, though, is that bit? Like,
horrendous.
The worst thing is, if they filmed his face and he was like, I'd fuck me, it'd probably be funny. But because it was just his mouth, fucking creepy.
Oh, it was not funny. It was horrendous.
Because single shot in this film is terrifying.
A lot of it made me like itchy.
I know,
like,
you mean
it made my skin crawl.
Yeah, and the worst, because he's literally peeling off skin, and it's just like no. It's just so fucked up. But it could have been so comical, and instead it was so fucking creepy.
Yeah,
like, they did it so well.
So well.
Although apparently. So the dance scene wasn't in the original screenplay. Did you see this?
No.
Oh, so, but then I'm going to get his name wrong. Ted Levine. I couldn't figure out his name.
That's right. Fine.
Okay. He insisted because he thought it would help. It helped explain how demented the character was, or the demented character better was the way they worded it. But like,
wow.
I mean, he's not wrong. But the problem is that scene is now so iconic.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
And it's like, yeah.
No, the only similar thing I read was that they were going to go for a different song instead of Goodbye Horses. And then I read that he wanted to change the song because he found Goodbye Horses a bit more feminine and a bit more softer and something that would be a bit more, because obviously he, I think it is mentioned in the film that he is trans. So he wanted something a bit more like.
This was the only bit that.
In touch with his sexuality.
So this was the bit that I kind of, watching it now, I don't think I'd realize, because I can't remember the first time I watched this, but I don't know if I realized this the first time I watched it, that it just doesn't sit right. And I don't know if that's like a modern lens, if that's that we just know more, that it's.
Maybe, it's like stereotyping.
Yeah, well, because the problem is, obviously, Hannibal Lecter, he's a doctor, so he's like a psychiatrist, but he's basically like putting him down and being like, he's not transsexual, because he's not called transgender, he's called transsexual. But it does say that he wants to have gender changed operation, and there's three doctors that would do it and guarantee they've all turned him down, because Dr. Lecter believes that he isn't transsexual. And then he says about how he wasn't a born monster, he's a made monster because of an abusive childhood. But again, that looks really bad on the transgender community. That, do you know what I mean? People, it's so far. I'm like, no, you can't just, and it's really hard because I was like, yeah, I don't know enough about psychopaths to know if that, like, you could. I don't know.
No, it's hard.
I'm not
isn't
a psychiatrist.
Yeah, when we kind of don't know the ins and outs, but it's, it was an interesting way of, like, it was an interesting addition to his character that he had been turned down by these people.
Mm.
And that, like, that maybe has driven him a bit more to kind of, like, go more psychotic and...
Yeah, but again, to be fair, I was looking more in, like, the feminist side of it. I ran out of time to look into more of sort of that side where it was, like...
Like, we don't know enough information, admittedly. We need to sort of go back and do our homework a little bit more. But I thought that was an interesting subject in terms of the song, that he wanted to be more in touch with his feminine side. So Ted Levine was like, let's pick this one. And obviously, I mean, I have listened to the original song that they were going to pick. Mm. And it would have worked. But Goodbye Horses is just like, again, it's one of those iconic scenes, as you've said. And that song is just completely associated with Silence of the Lambs now. Like, every time you ever hear it, I mean, I've only ever heard it in the film, but like, funnily enough. But yeah, like, that song, all you want to do is kind of just cross your legs and lift your arms up.
But I think that's the thing. I think, again, it does show a side of his character. I think the whole thing of him wanting to wear, like, people's skin, he didn't want to be himself, and that was because he was based on three serial killers. So it was Ted Bundy, and you see that with the first scene we see him, where he's wearing the broken arm cast. As soon as I saw that, I was like, oh no. I felt so bad for her because it was just like,
oh,
oh, it was horrible.
That scene, I'm really sorry to interrupt you.
No,
but
it's fine.
That scene as a woman just fucking, like, oh, I think it just hits more, like, where as you're a bit older and you realize like there's so much fucking violence against women, and then just, you know, something's gonna go wrong, like the way she's helping him in, and then she gets further into the back of the van. And you just know it's all going to go fucking tits up.
You're just begging her not to. And then you literally see her essentially get, like, pushed into her fate. And it's horrible. And I think
he says something like, are you a size 14 or something?
And then he's like, yes, when she is. And it's like, what the fuck? Like,
well, he wants a curvier girl, I guess, doesn't he?
No, I know. But I mean, from her perspective, to just be like, what the fuck are you asking me? And then, like...
Well, yeah, because she says she's like, sorry. And then it all just... Oh, absolutely terrifying. That's one of the most terrifying bits in the film for me, I think. It's so tense.
I love the scene of her in the car where she's just singing herself. Because again, that's how I get home from Derby once a week. He's just singing songs at full volume.
You can relate.
I think every girl who's ever blasted music in their car can, but it's just like, and then it's that really quick change of, she was just trying to be polite, just trying to be helpful. And
it's
all
so
went horribly
real.
Wrong.
That's so fucking real.
I hate that. I hate it. But then he was also a mix of Gary M. Heidnik. I don't care if I get his name wrong. He was a fucking serial killer. But he used to keep women sort of... It was the pit idea was from mirrored from him.
Okay.
And Ed Gein, who was obviously the one who cut up people's skin and used it for various things and wearing it.
Back. He was back after we covered Texas Chainsaw. He was also based on Leatherface, so he's made another appearance on our episode.
Oh, joy.
Joys. Interesting.
He's not giving these assholes credit.
I know.
It's really hard because it is that... I think it's hard to watch the violence against women in films, and then the films get criticised, and it's like, well, no, because this does fucking happen. And it happens a lot. And it's not us fucking celebrating it in films, but there's a reason they actually have, sorry, I'm going to go on a ramble. They have actually found the true crime and true crime podcast, and everyone's like, oh, white female. It is traditionally white females that listen to it. And they actually say it's like a way of coping with the sort of anxiety and that around like the crimes in real life, not because we're the main victims, but because we're the main victims you see. And that's only because they don't put people of color and men who are killed as much in the newspapers and in the media. So it's not because we actually are the highest, but it's because we see ourselves in the victims that we see in the media. But it's just because the media don't report on half the fucking cases out there. So it is really hard then when you see it in a film, because you're like, I don't like that it's making this like the norm, but actually it is the fucking norm. It happens every fucking day. It just isn't always in the newspaper. It depends who the victim is. Like,
yeah, wow, that's very interesting.
Watch me go on a rant.
Absolutely not. You can go on a rant all you like.
Yeah,
but we're allowed to be angry as women. We are allowed to be angry.
Exactly. Yeah. What's that t-shirt I saw the other day? It's like you should be grateful women want equal rights and not revenge.
Yes.
So that is true.
Just quickly touching on Jack Crawford before we go back to Buffalo Bill. Scott Glenn, who was the actor, and he prepared for the role, and he met with Johnny Douglas, and Johnny Douglas gave Glenn a tour of the facility and played him an audio tape. And it was various recordings from two serial killers, Lawrence Bittaker and Roy Norris, who were the toy box killers. And what they would do is, I don't know if you've ever heard of them, or
that's a horrible, that's a fucking horrible case. Yeah.
And it was where the toy box killers would record themselves and explain what they were going to do to this victim. And the recordings are on YouTube. I wouldn't recommend listening to them. Protect your mental health. Like, really? I mean, if you want to, that's your prerogative. But
we are not advising it. It is some fucked up shit.
We are absolutely not. But Scott Glenn, who was going to play Jack Crawford, listened to the audio tape of one about what they were going to do to this 16-year-old girl. And it was in preparation. It was so he could kind of get used to that horror. And apparently he wept as he listened to the recordings. And he even changed his liberal stance on the death penalty. So take that what you will. But I thought that was an insane commitment to the bit. To listen to that. Like, because that's going to stick with you forever.
And that's the thing, is like, there's, you know, commitment to the role. And then there's that. And you're like, that.
Yeah.
That isn't temporary. That, like you said, he's going to be with him forever.
So yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to kind of like, yeah, just give you that intense fact just then. But yeah, just before we went back on Buffalo Bill, onto more depressing and scary shit.
No, I think it's I think that's a really important fact, because it does show, you know, kind of, yeah, what they went through. I mean, mentally, they must have gone through a lot for this film. But yeah, that side of it.
Yes.
And again, I think that's the thing. Nobody is born evil. But when people do evil things, and it's like, oh, I don't believe in death penalty. But people change their minds when you kind of look evil in the face and go, yeah, you can't fix that. Like, it's really bad, but I get it. I have got a slightly happier commitment to their role fact.
Excellent.
Which I'll get. So I should have said it first. Let's go up on high. So Brooke Smith, who played Catherine, so she obviously spent most of the film in the pit. So she got the gig, but they offered it to her on the condition she could gain 25 pounds, because obviously she was playing a bigger girl. Woo, curves for the win. And she was actually in an acting class with actor Vincent D'Onofrio, who had to gain 75 pounds for Full Metal Jacket. And he turned around to her and said, if you want to gain the weight, fine, but get them to pay for the food. So she got them the producers had to give her a credit card. And she always jokes that they went over budget because they had to pay for her food. And I was like, do you know what? Fucking yeah. Because even if bad food, is cheap, if you're going to do that, they can fucking pay for it. And they can pay for your healthy food afterwards when you're trying to get back to your balanced diet or just healthy diet.
But absolutely. I was like,
fair play. So there you go. Commitment to both roles, but I know which one I'd rather do.
Yeah, 100%. I know I would rather sit and eat McDonald's every day. That's for sure.
I'm okay with that.
So just to briefly kind of wrap up with Buffalo Bill, what did you make of the whole interaction with him and Catherine when she finally gets some sort of revenge when the dog comes down and she starts threatening the dog? And you just think, wait, is this fucking going to go down? Like, is this going to...
Like, very clever, because obviously, yeah, she obviously realised that he had a connection to something. Her begging for her life wasn't working. So it was very clever to just be like, well, you clearly love this dog. What was the dog called? Precious?
Precious, yeah. I was actually just trying to think that.
So I was like, very clever. I did expect Buffalo Bill to just come and get a gun and shoot her, like, and just be like, well, you've lost enough weight, I've got what I needed, I can get my dog back. But again, would she have just, I don't know, would she have put the dog in the way? I don't know. Also, could he have got in the pit? I'm assuming he has a ladder and that's how he made it in the first place. But I did think it was really clever on her part. I think that showed as well, we've already said, there's some really good female characters in this, and she is one of them. She's gone through this horrific ordeal, and she's had the fucking brain power and that survival instinct and that will to survive, to be like, no, I'm fucking getting out of here. And that means I have to kill a dog. I have to kill a dog. Now, I'm not sure if I could kill a dog. She didn't kill the dog. She just broke its leg. And I don't know if she did or if it fell and broke its leg. But yeah.
I think the dog fell. I don't know.
That's what she claims. But I don't, if it had fell and she caught it, I mean, maybe the dog was fine. Like, maybe it hadn't broken a leg and she was just lying. But yeah, it was very clever. I was really creeped out by the bit when he's like leaning it. It's the lotion. It puts the lotion. That's fucking creepy. So it's really cool that she's gone through that and still manages to flip the script and be like, no, now you're my bitch. But she actually, I understand. She's very, very relieved that the FBI are there and Clarice is there. I keep going to call her Clarence, and I'm not really sure why. And she's just screaming. Clarice is like, shush. And she's like, ah. And I'm like, no, now it's time to shut the fuck up.
Yeah. She's like, help me, you stupid bitch. That's what she says, I think.
Shut the fuck up. And like, I understand the desperation, but you're going to get both yourselves killed. So it was just really funny because I was like, you've gone through all the waves.
A lot of emotions.
Yeah, but I was still really happy that she survived, because she didn't deserve that shit, man.
I know. And then she's escorted out, but then she's still clinging onto the dog.
Yeah.
It's like, oh no.
I was like, oh, she did like the dog.
There's going to be some like emotional attachment there now.
But like, it's hard because the dog was an innocent. Like, the dog didn't hurt her. But, I mean, to be fair, I was going to say the dog's going to remind her of what she went through, but she's never going to forget what she went through.
Exactly. Like, no, she isn't.
Dog's not adding anything to that memory. No,
absolutely not. But yeah. I mean, should we talk about that ending, like with the fucking, what are they called?
Camera?
The goggles.
Oh, the goggles. Oh, the night goggles, night vision.
The night vision, like, that just took the tenseness for me to a whole other level. Because obviously he was wearing the goggles, right? Yeah, because he was following her.
Yeah.
And so you did see it at times from his perspective. And so, it was just pitch black, like, ugh.
Yeah, they must have filmed that in pitch black as well to get that. Or I'm assuming they must have did. Done. So I just, yeah, it's... I was convinced she was dead. I think, like, I've seen this 100 times, but like, it was still like, every time you're like, how the fuck is she going to get out of that? And it's reflecting her training at the beginning where it was like, obviously she got caught out in the drill because of the sergeant behind her.
Yeah, that's true.
But also something else I read was that it was filmed deliberately. Like, a lot of the characters break the fourth wall. Not because they're like talking to the camera, but they are talking. They're talking to Clarice, but the way they film it is like dead down the camera. And then Clarice is always looking off to the side. So it's filmed as if you're her, like you're seeing through her eyes, which is why you get such a deadpan shot of Anthony Hopkins' dead eyes. So it was really interesting on that scene where it suddenly flipped the script again, where it was her being watched rather than what she was seeing. So, because again, what was she seeing? Fucking nothing. So I thought that was kind of, we'd seen this whole, most of the film from her perspective, and suddenly it's all turned around. So I did think it was really clever. It was really tense. It really built it up. It's really interesting with this film how they don't use a lot of typical horror cliches. Like,
Right.
there was no jump scares in all of that. And yet the entire time she's feeling her way down the stairs, you're expecting something to basically grab her ankle or something.
Yeah.
It was just building that tension. The lights went out. And it was actually very quick. Obviously, once they flicked on and she shot, and Rara, as soon as she heard that noise, it was all very quick, but it was so good. And it doesn't use any of the typical horror cliches. It's all very
No.
smart.
It doesn't cheapen itself by doing that. Like, it doesn't use any of, yeah, you're right. It doesn't use any of those tactics, and it
Yeah.
doesn't need to, because it's so scary on its own. And I know people that don't even watch horror, and they've seen this, and like, this is bad enough. And it's so creepy. That's what it is. So it doesn't need the jump scare from Buffalo Bill or anything. Like, it just builds that tension.
It's interesting as well, because for such a classic horror film, it's not very gory. But there's a lot of gore in it. Again, like you see the half-made bodysuit, but
It's implied.
you don't see him cutting the body off. Even the autopsy, we're seeing her with the tape recorder, we're hearing what's on the table. We're not seeing it, or you are seeing like cuts, but we don't see the cut happen. Even the thing in the mouth, the moth butterfly, you see the tweezers go in, but we're not seeing him like dig around. It's almost respectfully done. And even like Hannibal
So true.
biting the noses off and stuff, you kind of see it, but the way it's angled, and then you see the other copper's face, and then you see blood. You don't actually see like a tear or anything. And then when he's hung up, he's just hung there. Like, yeah,
That's very true.
there's a lot of implied gore. And again, it's psychological, it fucks with you.
And I think because, like, it is more of like a psychological thriller, or whatever you want to call it,
Yeah.
I think the other films that we've covered in the past, like Seven that we did on the You Run podcast, Saw, like, okay, Saw actually, when we watched it, admittedly, it wasn't that gory, but like,
Yeah.
it has that history of being extremely gory. It's a torture porn film, like, it's very
Yeah.
much in that region. But even something like Seven is insanely gory. It needs that. But this film, as you've rightfully said, like, it doesn't need that. And as, yeah, like, I think it's perfectly said that it was done respectfully. And that's
Yeah.
such a weird thing, but it was.
Yeah. I think because again, it's a really hard topic, is what they were covering. And I think there was some worry. I know that Jodie Foster worried that it would make the FBI and the police look stupid. So that was a concern she had while filming. I know that I can't remember who the other actresses were, but there were a couple that didn't want to be involved because of the context of the film. And then on the other hand, so when Anthony Hopkins, when his agent, director, manager, producer, fucking whatever, rang him up and was like, "Hey, do you want to do this? Told him about the project and was like, oh, it's this film called Silence of the Lambs." Apparently, he asked if it was a kids' film.
Amazing.
Incredible.
Incredible.
I was like, that is brilliant.
The opposite.
But yes, you're actually playing Shaun the Sheep. And
Yeah. That's amazing. That
I
is
was like,
amazing.
that's brilliant. So yeah, some very, and you can see why people worried about that. But again, they do it in a way, it's a hard topic, but they don't slice the women up for the sake of it. They don't. Even the woman in the autopsy, you see that she's been like brutalized, but they're not just showing, fuck, they don't just showing her boobs for the sake of it. I mean, it's a corpse. Like, do you know what I mean? They're not, and
Yeah.
it's, yeah, respectful is the only word you can use, which is a weird word in this film.
It completely works though.
Yeah.
Talking of when you said about Jodie Foster at the FBI, they I think they were also quite the FBI were quite skeptical about how it would come across as the treatment of women in the FBI as well.
Yeah.
And then they said about 10 years after this film came out, apparently there were like hundreds more applications from women for applying to be in
Okay.
the FBI, apparently. I don't know how true that is. I did see that online, so let's but
Okay, but can you
so
credit a
maybe that
film?
film had some kind of impact.
Can you credit a film if it came out 10 years earlier?
Well, that's the thing. They were like, oh yeah, they looked at statistics from the past 10 years, and apparently applications from women had gone up.
So I do wonder. One, absolutely, I can see why someone would watch this and be like, that is fucking cool. I think as well, because I think when I first watched this, I think I can't remember how old I was, but I think I was like ending school, college age, and it was around that time you're like, shit, that's an option. And I really liked the idea of like psychology. I wasn't very good at it at college, but I liked the idea of it and how people thought. I still quite like that, but I think it was that I was very into like the criminal side of it. And it was interesting because I think this film did make me think that a lot more serial killers were used to help catch other killers. That I think there have been cases, but I think this is very much more of a cinema thing. But this film did make me think it was much more common than it was. But I can't have my point now. But yeah, so that kind of I can see why people would watch this and go, yeah, that's cool, especially as a female, especially as someone who doesn't even know that's a career opportunity or possibility. Or but this also came out in 1991. So was it just because women were actually going into jobs and bigger careers and those sort
Exactly,
of
like
fields? Because I mean, yes, I mean,
you
women
don't
were
know.
only really started working in what 1940s. And I was like, and at that point, it was factories. And so I was like, do you know what I mean? Yeah, it built up and up and up. But I mean, when did we finally get a bank account? The 80s? So it was like,
Well, exactly.
what were they going to pay you if you like joined the FBI in the 60s? Like,
Yeah, no, it's very true. I mean, if there's any truth to it, it's very interesting that like
yeah.
the Clarice Starling, Jodie Foster has had this impact, but
I'd love to, yeah, it'd be very interesting to talk to some like girls that went into criminal careers, not criminal careers, catching criminals. Yeah.
Well, apparently the some of the extras in the film were FBI agents,
Oh, that's cool.
were in that kind of
That sort of
realm of
field.
work. Yeah, that sort of field of work. But yeah, so that's quite cool that they kind of had real people in the background that actually did know what they were doing.
Although, aren't FBI agents supposed to be like super, super secret? Like, why would you stick them in a Hollywood movie and just go stand
Yeah,
in the background?
sure.
I said, didn't they do the same in The Dark Knight, where like there's the scene of them, there's loads of police officers, but a lot of them were actual police officers, I think.
Oh really? Oh,
I
what, the
think
bit with the
so.
Joker?
Yeah, where he's not in
Oh,
makeup.
yeah. Oh, interesting.
I'm sure, watch me be completely wrong, but I'm sure I'm not.
I'm just gonna believe you.
Cool, great. I'm gonna rename the podcast to the Bullshit Podcast, and I'm just gonna tell you lies every week about different films.
Sure.
Yeah,
Well, you say, I mean, it obviously was a Hollywood film. It had big names, but it was considered a sleeper hit, Silence of the Lambs, for a long time. Like, it wasn't appreciated really in its time. It kind of took a while for it to be appreciated, which I think surprises me so much, because just when I properly first watched it, not on Christmas Eve, when I actually did sit down and watch it, I couldn't believe how amazing it was as a film. So it's really interesting that it was considered meh when it came out.
I don't know. Was it? I'm gonna ask my folks.
Well, I mean, we'll have to ask them, see what how it was sort of considered then. But yeah, apparently a big sleeper hit, which really surprised me about this film, because this is like, as I say, I'm considered one of the best films
Yeah.
of all time. So yeah, really weird.
That's
But
crazy.
it really is. You can just really delve deep into those three main characters for like, and we have done that for most of this episode, but there is just so much to talk about with these people.
They are just great. They are just great. They're really well, you can tell they're really well rounded, they're really well thought out. But then I don't know, but even the smaller characters, as we said, we've already mentioned Ardelia, fucking Dr. Chilton is just such a wanker. You actually so how do you dislike the guy? You're like, he's supposed to be the good guy. Like he oversees all the fucking serial killers, and you're like, I hate you.
And that's why that relationship you have, or that fondness you have of Hannibal Lecter, comes back, because then it's like, okay, he's about to kill Dr. Chilton, but Dr. Chilton's a bit of a twat. So
So,
is
well,
this? Oh, and that just that scene when he's coming off the plane And you so, can just, and Hannibal Lecter is just watching him.
He just follow. But he's got swagger in his walk at that point. Like, it's pretty good.
He looks amazing as well.
But apparently there was an alternate ending where it was going to be, he was going to ring Clarice from an office while he was like peeling an orange. And then he was going to hang up and look up and have Dr. Chilton tied up and be like, now then, where were we or something?
Ah.
But I kind of liked it how it was because...
Me too.
Yeah. It left it to your imagination. It also left Clarice with the last word, even though the last word was...
Dr. Lecter?
Dr. Lecter, like... But I did see a thing as well where it was like, it's really irritating. That obviously they're like, oh, this amazing feminist icon. And she got her FBI. That's what she was working for the whole film. And then it's mirrored with him getting his freedom. And I'm like, yeah.
Can't you just let have this woman have her? Just let the woman have a win.
Fuck off. Like, you couldn't have rang a day earlier. Like, piss off.
I know. That is very interesting, actually. Then you see the victory that the woman gets and then it's kind of overshadowed by...
Yeah, why do
this guy?
Men, your timing could be better, just saying.
So I do understand why people were a bit like, oh, that's a shame, because you know, you kind of wanted to end it on like a victory. Or but the problem is that like the Hannibal Lecter series doesn't end there.
No.
We know that there's other books, we know that like his story hasn't ended there. So I thought the ending was perfect, you know, like kind of like seeing him slowly follow Dr. Chilton around. I thought that just kind of was on the same level as the entire film, the rest of the film. I feel like the end, if it was the alternate ending you mentioned, it might be too violent, kind of would cheap out a bit towards the end. Whereas I think this original ending, perfect. And it flowed really nicely with the film.
I think it was just such a classic line as well. Like, I'm having an old friend for dinner. Like, fucking great. Did you... You know the bit where she's trying to get him to give them Buffalo Bill's name and she's talking about, oh, you can go on this island and you can swim and everything. Did you hear what he said about the island? So Plum Island, and it's off New York, but he actually did say it in the film. The island is the site of the Plum Island Animal Disease Center. So apparently, and I don't know exactly what they do, but they basically study like this. It's dedicated to the study of foreign animal diseases of livestock. So I think they basically like say, get a cow, give it a disease and stick it on the island to see what happens. It's probably more complicated than that, but that's the simple generic I got of it. It's the only facility in the country authorized to work with live foot and mouth disease. They've studied African swine fever at the height of the Cold War. It was a study of biological weapons. So it's... The fact that they're just like, off you go, Lecter. Like, what's he going to do? Just go and fucking swim with a bloody radioactive pig and fucking find himself a new sidekick? Like...
They just didn't know what to do with him, did they? Like,
no. I love that Hannibal knew what it was as well, because he calls it out. Yeah. But I was like, I'd still kind of... If I was a prisoner, I'd still be okay with that, if I'm honest. I'd go see the radioactive animals, that's fine.
Yeah, sure.
Why I won't not? Pet them, maybe. Depends how cute they are. Mate, the guy was getting offered a beach holiday a year and he didn't have to pay for it. Like, fuck yeah.
Insane.
Don't do the crime. I'll do the time. And the time on a beach. Sorry, I just thought that was a really interesting addition.
That is. Okay. So... Would we survive Silence of the Lambs? Would we survive? Are we saying Hannibal Lecter? Are we saying Buffalo Bill? I mean, either way, I'm fucked. So.
Why do you reckon you're fucked either way?
I think Hannibal Lecter's too smart for me. I think I would easily die in his company somehow. I feel like he's very... you'd be very easily manipulated by him, like Clarice was. So I think there would be a way that he'd get inside my brain. Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty headstrong, but so was Clarice. So I feel like, but then if I like befriended him, then maybe it would be the same relationship that he wouldn't want to kill me. So maybe I have a bit more of a chance with Hannibal Lecter, with James Gum, whatever you want to call him, Buffalo Bill. No fucking chance. Because he's just too strong. He's got his agenda. He's like, knows. I just feel like there would be you. That's kind of what's so scary about it to me, is that you would be so helpless. So, yeah, maybe Lecter. No, Buffalo Bill. What about you?
I think same. I think, Lecter's a hard one because it's hard because obviously when Clarice comes in at the beginning, it's always like, oh, do you scare easy? And she does seem a little bit timid.
Yeah.
So I don't feel like you have to go in there really, really brave. So I'm like, okay, you can go in there a little bit human. I don't know though. It's hard because he does respond well to her being like, yeah, you ate yours. Because I think that's the problem. I'd say a smart ass comment. And whether or not he'd go, fuck you, you're dead. Yeah. Or whether he'd appreciate that would depend on what the smart ass comment was. So maybe. He's also behind glass. So again, the thing is though, if he doesn't like my smart ass comment, he stays behind the glass because there's no chance of him coming out to help. So potentially with him. Unless he just pretends he liked my smart ass comment until he actually does escape and then I'm victim number one. Buffalo Bill, as you say, you're so vulnerable. Like, it's the fingernail in the wall that, oh God, that's genuinely one of my biggest fears. And the only reason I might be okay with Buffalo Bill is since Ted Bundy and all the horrible stories we know about him and how he captured women, if a man with a broken arm was like, hey, can you help me? Fuck no. Sorry, call a friend. Like, unless I was with a group of six people, no, fuck off. Because I'd open a door for him, but I wouldn't help him carry fucking furniture. But again, I don't want a victim blame because I think it is a thing of, especially being a girl, you just want to be like helpful and polite. And it's really fucking annoying that we're taught that way in society. But again, now we've seen it go wrong. I think I'd just be like, no, it's late. I'm going in the house with my groceries. Unfortunately, he now knows where I live, so he may have another plan. But so I'd say I'd survive Buffalo. There you go. So we'll flip it. I'll survive Buffalo Bill because I wouldn't fucking help him in the first place. I'd piss off Hannibal Lecter. You'd survive Hannibal Lecter, but you'd piss off Buffalo Bill.
Okay, sick. There we go.
Yeah. Okay, what are you giving this out of 10? Out of 10? Out of 5? We're giving it... What's your... Fuck, you could tell we're out of practice. What's your spook and how many spooks?
Right. Oh, there are so many spooks to pick from.
I should have stuck with a fingernail.
I am going to go with the one that always sticks with me, is when Buffalo Bill and Catherine are having that conversation, if you like. It wasn't a conversation, but like saying about the lotion on its skin and she's screaming up to him. I just always kind of stuck with me as I've always watched this. It's just kind of because it's the first interaction you kind of get of both of them.
It's the it rubs the lotion, like he doesn't even see her as a person.
Yeah, and like she has got a bit of back chat, but not as much as she gets later down the film, and so there is still that kind of like fear. There's always fear from her, but like way more. And that makes it really fucking chilling to me.
Yeah.
And I've just always remembered that episode when, part when she's screaming and then he screams back at her or laughs or cries, whatever he does. Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I'm going to give this 5 spooks because I can't give it anything less. I just can't. Like,
yeah, you can't.
As I've said, it's not just a great thriller, psychological horror, whatever you want to call it. It's just an incredible film, and I think even if you're not a big horror fan, just fucking watch it. If you're a fan of Seven, like Saw, that kind of thing, like it's a very creepy film, don't get me wrong, but like I still think you'll find some enjoyment from it. Like my family, like a lot of them don't like horror, but they love this film.
Yeah,
it's
fucking good.
Yeah, to be honest, it's a perfect film. It's a great film. What about you?
So my spook is going to be that iconic bit of Hannibal in the mask, because just fucking, again, the amount of acting he does just with his eyes. It was between that and the... which again, just By the bean. Which apparently is like, oh, where did I read it? I gotta find it really
a nice quick. Chianti. And you know what? A nice Chianti is very nice. So
all right, we get
I
it.
I do not blame him. Every time
the good wine.
Yeah, it's when it's payday and I have all my other bills haven't come out. That's when I'm like, oh yeah, I'll get a nice Chianti. Ooh,
a nice Chianti with my human tonight. So I found this on All the Right Movies. So Hopkins' now iconic lip roll sound after his father bean speech was inspired by Bela Lugosi's iconic title performance in Dracula. He said, when I was a kid, I'd tell the girls around the street the story about Dracula and I'd go, tha-tha-tha-tha. As a result, they'd run away screaming.
Wow. Okay.
So he's been practicing for this part for a fucking long time. So I'd go with that because fucking iconic. But I'm also giving it a 5 out of 5 because why the fuck would you not?
Precisely.
Amazing. Okay, well, that is our amazing episode of The Silence of the Lambs. I'm pretty sure we could have talked about this for like another 2 hours, but the Zoom clock is ticking, so we'll have to let you go. But catch us on all the social medias, and if you check us out a little bit early, you'll be able to see what is coming up next. And like, subscribe, whatever you have to do, and then maybe one day, if this is our full-time job, Charlie will actually be able to come on as well. So until then, bye. Don't die. We can never synchronize. We need a new thing. Go and have a Chianti. A Chianti?
Go and have a nice Chianti.
Chianti.